Hey folks, greetings from the Offensive Security Group here at Secure IT 360, coming at you with a new episode of the Cyber Threat Perspective. You've got Tyler here and myself, Brad. Today we're talking about DNS, more specifically DNS security. You know, it's kind of one of those things that sits in the background and always just works, and so we don't really give it a lot of thought. So we're going to try to remedy that today. From an admin perspective, you know, if you guys like what we're doing, please like, subscribe, share. You can really help us out. Also, don't forget that you can rate this podcast in whatever your podcast platform is, like Spotify or Apple Podcasts. So, you know, give that a consideration as well. All right, dude. So DNS, man, you wrote a white paper on this last year. It was really well received by the community. We're passing it out to clients who have questions about DNS security. You know, give us the rundown. You know, it stands for something, I think.
Yep. Like the other million acronyms in IT. DNS is domain name system. For anybody that doesn't know, DNS is what turns the host name that you put in your browser to an IP. There's different servers starting from the top. There's probably, what, three different in the hierarchy that your request can go to until you find a server that has that record that you requested. And then it returns the IP to you and then takes you to the server that you want to go to, that you made that request to. So DNS has been revolutionary in the way that it has enhanced how quickly people can get to different servers and how much easier it has made the internet to navigate as a whole.
Dude, I don't want to type in IP addresses in the browser. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I don't either. I can imagine having to remember the IP address to our website and every other website that I go to on a daily basis.
No chance, man. No chance.
So with that, you know, DNS being as old as it is, I think it was introduced in like the 80s, I want to say.
Yeah.
It has a bunch of security implications along with everything else. DNS on its own is inherently not secure. There's multiple attacks that have been crafted over the years that have made it insecure. However, there's also been a bunch of security rollouts that have been introduced for DNS that make it more secure. And we'll talk about those here shortly.
Yeah. And I feel like DNS, man, like anything designed in the 80s and 90s, it wasn't designed to be secure, right? Like if you think about the concept of DNS and what it's supposed to do, it's designed to be open. It's designed for anybody to leverage it, you know? And so, you know, same thing with HTTP, right? Like if you go back and look at the origins of HTTP, similar to DNS, it was like, yeah, man, we just want everybody to get everything and do all the things that they want to do.
Right.
And nobody was like, yeah, but what if they're evil? You know, like, and so, you know, DNS, just like HTTP, you know, we slapped on SSL and we, you know, we've since spent multiple decades trying to bolt on, you know, security to these core infrastructure components. So anyway, yeah, it's an interesting observation that, you know, this stuff, we're evolving this out of necessity, but its original design was not designed.
Right. The original intent was just to make things easier for people. And of course, security is always on the back end of that. So
always. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about some common DNS attacks. You know, DNS spoofing is something that has been around for some time, right? And there's really kind of two attacks. Most of the attacks against DNS, I guess you could categorize them into two kind of groups, right? One is an attack on the physical DNS server itself, right? Like that specific one. And then attacks on the more broad concept of DNS. And so the first two, spoofing and cache poisoning, are really an attack on the functionality of it, on the more broad idea of DNS. And they can be used to target organizations, but it's usually by somebody with a lot of resources. So DNS spoofing really talks more about me tricking a DNS server into thinking that I'm the authoritative server, right? And so, you know, normally when we make a DNS resolution request, we'll type in the name or you know, our application, whatever it is, makes a request to that FQDN. And that's going to go out and try to find either a server who has a cached value or the authoritative server. And the authoritative server is the one who has the record and is responsible for maintaining the record to convert that host name into an IP address. If I can trick other DNS servers into thinking that I am authoritative, then, you know, it'll allow me to give an erroneous response. And that might send you off to a different IP address that's maybe malicious in nature. And so DNS spoofing comes in a couple other flavors too. You know, one of those being that I can spoof your internal DNS servers if I'm inside your environment, and I can send your users off to crazy places, right? It's really good for like relaying attacks, stuff like that. Cache poisoning is a variation of that same kind of attack. But what we're going to do is, instead of targeting, you know, trying to emulate the authoritative DNS server, what I want to do is I want to emulate or I want to take over the cache of an existing DNS server, like a legitimate DNS server, right? So what is cache? How does it play into DNS? So anytime we make a request, the DNS server that is making that request on your behalf, because what you're going to do is you have a DNS server that you use, right? And when you make a request to resolve something, you go to that DNS server and you say, hey, buddy, do you have google.com? Almost uniformly, your DNS server is going to be like, yeah, totally, man. Everybody asked for that. Here's the IP address, right? And so you go to somewhere crazy like, you know, I don't know, microsoft.com. Who would do that, right? So since no one goes there, the DNS server is likely not going to have that record. So it's going to go to its DNS server and say, hey, do you have this record? And it's going to go to its DNS server. It's going to keep rolling up. And eventually, if no one's ever heard of microsoft.com, it will reach the authoritative DNS server, right? And that DNS server will say, here's my IP address. Well, all of those downstream DNS servers that made that request will then cache that value. Like, hey, for now until this record expires, right? I think it's I don't want to try to remember the amount of minutes, but it's not forever, but it's a reasonable amount of time. From now until this record expires, I'm going to tell everybody that this IP address is associated with that host. If I can poison that process, if I can tell a server, hey, here's the cache value I want you to have, then that DNS server and all downstream DNS servers, even though they're not technically hacked or compromised, they're going to serve up a bad record. And then I can, you know, basically trick users into going to the wrong place. So denial of service attacks, there are a couple of interactions that you can do with that, with DNS servers, that will cause either a reflected attack or cause that DNS server to improperly handle things and it'll go down, right? Effectively taking DNS away from, you know, whoever's DNS server that is.
Yeah. I think the most notable that I see specifically on engagements, you know, I probably see it on one out of every five, is an amplification attack.
Yeah.
Where if you have recursion available and you have public DNS, an attacker can leverage your DNS to send small requests. So they can do an any request for a specific domain. And that's a small request. I don't know exactly how many bytes. It's probably less than 20.
Yeah, it's small.
And then the response to that is huge because it spits out every record that it knows about that specific domain. And so when you couple that with a large amount of requests sent from that DNS server to whatever server you want to knock offline, you end up with a DDoS attack. And the thing that makes that tricky is the person who's receiving the attack sees, oh my God, look, it's this IP and it's your DNS server. And the attacker is never really found out or known about because he used you as the middleman for that attack.
Yep. So it's a 64 byte query that results in a 3,200 byte response. Yeah. So think about how that amplifies over, you know, a million requests. You can literally just deny the network. You know what I mean? Like that DNS server may be up, you know, but if they got a 10 meg connection or even 100 meg connection, they used to have that. They don't have that anymore. now it's full of DNS responses, you know?
Yep. Yeah. So commonly when people see that DDoS attack on the report, they're like, I didn't know that we could get DDoS from a DNS server. And it's like, well, you can't, but people can leverage that to knock other people offline. Mm-hmm. So,
yep.
So don't have your DNS public with recursion.
Right. Don't be that guy. Right.
Don't be that guy.
Yep. We're just making it easier on the bad guys to do bad things. So, so tell me about DNS security extensions, right? So that's kind of a different solution to two of the three problems that we talked about.
You know, right.
From a DNS perspective. And just to be clear, we're not talking about like unpatched bind servers with RCEs. You know what I mean? That's not something that we're having that conversation, because that exists in every platform. Doesn't matter, right? If you got Apache, you know, good luck keeping that thing patched, man. It's just eat up all the time. It's just rough. But yeah, so just to be clear, you know, we're specifically talking about the implementation of DNS and its security and different features around it, not necessarily a specific vulnerability on, you know, IIS or Microsoft DNS. So anyway.
Yeah, so DNSSEC, it implements public and private keys. So you're going to post a public key in your DNS record. And any record that is pulled from your DNS is going to be checked. The record is going to be signed, and that signature on the record is going to go back, and it's going to check the record in your public DNS to, hey, do we match? If it does, then the user who requested it is going to get that record. So what does that do? That prevents cache poisoning and spoofing, because it verifies authenticity of records. It verifies that the record that's published in DNS is the true record that the user has requested. And so it's just another layer of protection for your users, because they need every safeguard in the possible world to stay secure. And it's also a free implementation 90% of the time. So DNSSEC is something that we've pushed heavily. A lot of the cloud providers also, it's a switch you can flip with them. Say, hey, can we enable this? And it's something they can enable. It's not a hard rollout. And it's just one of those external hygiene things that makes you inherently more secure than without.
Totally agree, man. So, you know, when you can flip one switch for very low or no cost, and it knocks out, you know, 70% of the DNS attacks that are out there, man, why wouldn't you do it, right? So let's talk briefly about, you know, probability and risk with regards to cache poisoning and DNS spoofing. It's not a common thing we see on the public internet. If it is something that is going to be leveraged against you, it's likely to be somebody with a lot of resources, nation states, you know, really motivated, organized, well-funded attackers are going to leverage this kind of thing. And so, you know, I wouldn't tell someone, hey, if you don't do this, you're going to get, you know, you're going to have a problem. But if somebody is going to come after you with those kind of resources, this is a really easy way to just, again, we're minimizing that external security footprint, right? And you said something that I really, really love, and that is, you know, it's about hygiene. And I agree, right? This is about just being buttoned up the best that you can. You want to look less like a victim, so that the bad guys move on to the next person that looks more like a victim, right? It's the same thing as physical security. It's the same thing as a lot of things. But the point is, if you're buttoned up, you know, when I'll put it to you this way, when we go in and we do a pen test and somebody has DNSSEC turned on, we're like, holy smokes, this guy actually has something going on, you know? Yeah. And so, like, it's a pleasant surprise, because very often, you know, what, 95% of the time, we don't see DNS security extensions. Yeah. So yeah, folks, I mean, it's an easy fix. To my knowledge, I'm not going to certify this statement, but to my knowledge, I've never heard or seen anything that caused problems downstream from DNS security extensions being turned on. You know, the only time I've even heard of there being little hiccups is when you're running a split DNS environment and your internal external DNS are the same. That could cause some problems internally, theoretically, but I've never heard of that happening. So
yeah.
So there shouldn't be a lot of negative impact, right? You know, it's not like we're telling you to go turn off OneDrive. It's, you know, we're talking about, you know, flipping a switch with your DNS provider to greatly enhance your DNS security and decrease the ability of bad guys to use these two types of attacks. So,
yeah, I think we've probably advised maybe 20 plus clients and other people to turn it on. And I haven't heard a single piece of negative feedback about it.
I agree.
It's usually something that's really easy for them to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that for sure, man.
But DNSSEC is not your only safeguard. Let's talk about DNS filtering and content filtering, which I feel like everybody in the world should be doing.
Man. Yeah. It's huge.
DNS filtering, high level. You basically instruct your DNS where your users can't go. So you put in a blacklist of records or bad sites. You can ingest those automatically from certain lists, or you can just manually put them in. And it's just another safeguard for your users. You can block certain sites, via content filtering. You can block certain types of sites with content filtering and DNS filtering. And it really just helps further protect your users from going to bad sites and potentially downloading stuff that they shouldn't be downloading, and just helping protect them more. that was super high level. If you want to dig deeper into that.
Yeah, no, I mean, for me, this is a fundamental thing. When we start talking about, you know, implementing security from a program and an enterprise perspective, this is like one of the first five steps. Okay. I don't need my people going to download Nessus or download Nikto or download Nmap, you know? So like immediately I'm like blacklisting hacker tools. Right. And so, you know, there are some challenges with regards to that, right? You know, when you block broad categories, when you block specific types of things, it does sometimes hinder people's ability to work, right? In my previous life, I work at a bank. We blacklisted a ton of stuff. Obviously, my job is security. The things that I needed to do, I'd have to go outside. So we ended up having to actually get like a DSL connection dropped at our desk that we would plug a separate computer into so we could get to the unfiltered internet. You know, no chance of that being abused, but, so it can create challenges, you know, in a lot of folks like education, they can't do that. You know, like there's this concept of openness and availability where everybody needs to get to everything because I don't know, education question mark.
Education. Right? Yep.
Freedom. Education. Yeah. And, but the problem with that is you're also opening yourself up to, you know, Russian hosted malware servers and things of that nature, which is really what we're trying to do, right? Is if we're categorizing bad stuff as bad stuff, we want to block access to it. So that means that when a piece of malware drops on an endpoint and it automatically goes out and tries to download whatever it needs, it can't get to it, right? So we kill it before it starts. It's a fundamental component of security. And guys, if you're not doing this, you know, you're probably wrong.
Right? We can give a real world example because I feel like that always helps when it's practical. We were doing a purple team engagement with an organization a while back. And part of the engagement, we were trying to test that DNS filtering, content filtering that they had in place. And so we stood up a server and we gave it a known good domain name that I think we had bought a little while before the engagement.
Yeah.
And we had a malicious file sitting on that server. And the goal was to get to that server, download the file, right? Their content filtering blocked the website that we had stood up. As an IP originally, sort of like, okay, let's give it a known good classified host name and see what happens then. And I guess since the record was so new, it was still classified as miscellaneous and it was again blocked.
Yep.
So it prevented them from downloading, you know, that malicious piece of software that we had.
Yeah. And we try all different kinds of stuff. We'll go out and we'll buy expired domains that'll be like, you know, a nail salon. You know, they'll go out of business, they release their domain, we'll go buy it for $12 and it's classified as business, which almost no one's blocking, right? But really good platforms and really good DNS security solutions will also have it flagged for recently released or recently purchased. So it's not a new domain. So it doesn't fall into like an uncat or that new domain category. But if there have been changes to the registrar information, it'll nuke that too. And that's the kind of tricks the bad guys are using right now. And so, you know, you should be testing to make sure your platform protects you against that. 5 years ago, dude, if we were to buy an expired domain, we'd get into anybody's environment with that, you know? Yeah. And so the tools are improving, they're evolving, they're getting better. I love it. But if you guys aren't leveraging it, then, you know, our purple team's going to really be a rough one for you, you know?
Yep. Yep. Let's talk briefly about cloud-based DNS and cloud-based DNS security. I want to give a huge shout out to Cloudflare. I feel like Cloudflare, out of all the DNS providers, has to be the best that I've seen.
They're great.
I've seen people propagate records in Cloudflare and then fully propagate across their environment in like 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The time for that is spectacular. Not only that, Cloudflare makes it super easy to implement DNSSEC. And their platform as a whole is just amazing. So huge shout out to Cloudflare. I highly suggest that if you're on-prem DNS right now, go somewhere else. But, you know, go to the cloud for DNS. Don't host it yourself. There's numerous benefits to that. One of which being that cloud providers offer DDoS protection for you as part of the package. And so you don't have to worry about being taken offline. So if business continuity is one of the things that you're trying to achieve, that's a huge, huge service that they offer.
Man, listen, I can't agree with you more. Cloudflare does a lot of good stuff, not just DNS. We run up against Cloudflare weekly, monthly, multiple times a month, just constantly. And we're in the for the most part, we're always very satisfied with what we see. You don't hear us say that very often about anybody, right? So take that for what it is. But here's why I want to tell you that I think Cloudflare stands out a little bit. They take DNS security very seriously, like you said, right? They've implemented all of these different features. We were working with a pretty large client last year, and we told them that we wanted them to turn DNSSEC on, right? And so they were like, yeah, cool, totally. So they reached out to their DNS vendor, if I told you who it was, you'd be surprised. It's one of the largest DNS vendors out there. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the response they got back from their technicians was, yeah, we don't do that. Why would you want to do that? we don't know how to do that.
We don't like security. Sorry.
So here's what's funny about it. The white paper we were referencing was written by the company who told them they don't know how to do it. There was a full DNSSEC white paper hosted on their website from the company that was hosting their DNS and telling them they couldn't do DNS security. So we were like, dude, just go to Cloudflare. Just stop, you know? Those are the kind of things when we're talking about something as important as DNS, and I'm not just talking about important as DNS from just a security perspective. If you don't have DNS, everything stops working. And so make sure you get a DNS provider that is serious about DNS, right? I'm not talking about, you know, your down the street ISP who's like, yeah, I can totally host your DNS for you. You know, somebody like Cloudflare or somebody like GoDaddy does a pretty good job of DNS, I think, because it's their job. It's literally, you know, part of what they offer as a core feature and functionality. So just make sure you DNS should be taken seriously. It's as serious as when you select your email vendor, right? Nobody's going to AOL to get their business email right now. Okay. So maybe don't go to, you know, mom and pop ISP to get your DNS, right? Take it seriously and go do some research. So yeah, man, business continuity, security, ease of configuration, support. That's what I'm looking for in a DNS provider.
Yep. Set best practices for DNS security. I feel like this is one that I feel like I'm recommending every single engagement I'm on. Mm-hmm. So the most common or probably the most valuable best practice that I can give people because of how often I see vulnerabilities arise of it because of it is people not decommissioning records that are no longer active.
Oh man, every engagement, everyone.
And there's a lot of implications of that, but like you just look bad at security for no reason. You delete that record. You have 6 vulnerabilities that drop off your report, but we didn't know it was still there. So monitoring your DNS health and decommissioning records that you're no longer using or no longer active or that users no longer need is just a huge recommendation that I can't, you know, push enough for people.
Yeah, man. And you know, going back to hygiene, you know, let's talk about some specific threats associated with DNS, those expired records, not expired, but those old outdated records, right? Most of the time, they're either pointing somewhere that doesn't exist, okay, which has its own security risks. Because if I can go take over whatever it's pointing at, which in a lot of cases is some landing page or shared host IP or some crap like that, I'll go take that over. And by the way, you're already pointing at the thing that I want you to point at. I don't have to spoof. I don't have to poison cache. You have this old DNS record pointing to a dangerous place.
Yep.
That's one problem. You know, the other problem is, you know, in a lot of cases, like you said, they're pointing somewhere that has inherent security flaws, right? So like they're pointing to some server that should have been decommissioned, or they're pointing to some other environment that has vulnerabilities. And they're like, oh, that's not even our server. Well, dude, your DNS record's pointing to it. That's your server, right? And that's what a lot of people, I think, don't understand is that, you know, when you have that, when that DNS record in your DNS environment exists, you own that from a risk perspective. That is your responsibility. You know, you go look at a bit site or, you know, ask, you know, any kind of third party assessor hey, you know, this DNS record's mine, but it points to somewhere else, they're going to tell you that's your risk.
Yep.
You own that. So, yeah, man, it's clean it up. Keep that DNS stuff cleaned up, cleaned out.
Yeah, because I don't know how often we see part domains as a result of just going through, you know, we do subdomain brute force and we see all of these hosts. Part of what we do is we're going to go to all of them and see what they are. And I'd say about 70% of engagement, somebody has a part domain. And if we can go buy that up and that DNS record points to what we own now, you know, then you're in trouble. You've eliminated one step that would make things difficult for us. And, absolutely, you know, it just makes things so much easier. So
Let's flip that story back to, you know, that purple team that you were talking about where we can go take over a domain.
Yep.
They don't block malware anymore, you know, because they're hosting it.
Right. It's theirs.
I mean, it's close enough, right? So right. Yeah, no, I'm tracking. That's good. Yeah, I agree. All right. So challenges and limitations. I think we're kind of getting close to wrapping here. You know, not everything that we've talked about is easy. And certainly, you know, especially if you're going to host DNS, it's tough.
Yeah.
You know, don't do it. Just don't do it.
Yeah. Spend the money, please.
And it's not a lot of money. We're not talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars here. You know, we're talking like a few grand for a small company, you know, maybe a little more for a medium sized company. It's not crazy. And there's a lot of times if you already have services, like let's say you're using Cloudflare's WAF, which by the way, also pretty dang good.
Yep.
You know, if you're leveraging their services, you can probably get DNS tacked on for a very low cost. I don't really know. We don't work for Cloudflare. They don't give us any money. So like,
I wish they did.
So, but we know a good set of tools when we see it. So,
yeah, I'd say another challenge is, you know, the false positive filtering and the annoyances of implementing DNS filtering for anybody that's not doing it right now that wants to do it, take that step. It's going to be a headache for a little bit, but the benefit that you get out of it, overcomes that challenge of implementing it.
Yeah.
Don't block anything broad at the very beginning. We've seen that. It's a nightmare.
Oh yeah.
My biggest thing would be, you know, implement records as they come up that you want to block. So ingest lists of known bad sites and then just put in ones that you want on your own outside of that.
Yeah. And another option too is turn on alerting instead of blocking. Right. Or monitoring or whatever the version is. And so what we would do is anytime we implemented a new blacklist feature, whether it's like network access control, whether it's, you know, in this case, you know, categorical DNS blocking, you know, we would implement it in monitor mode first. And then we do that for a month or 2 months. And then we'd pull a report and that report would be like, hey, this category would have been blocked under your current policy. And here are all the websites. And we would look through them. And often we would find, you know, miscategorized sites, right? Like there might be a banking website categorized as, you know, something crazy like e-commerce or something. And so, you know, that's your opportunity to tweak that and tune that. Don't rush into this thing, you know, and I'll tell you too, DNS filtering, content filtering, stuff like that. It's always going to require care and feeding. Right. Because there's always going to be new sites. There's always going to be miscategorizations. There's always going to be that one guy who needs to be an exception to every rule. And he's like, you're blocking all of my favorite sites. And you go to it and it's like a sports gambling site. We're like, bro, calm down.
But yeah, get on DraftKings at work.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, there's going to be that care and feeding, but there are ways to offset that by going slow, having a good plan, have a backout plan, you know, just normal IT stuff. So.
Yeah. And then just quickly, some resources and tools for you guys. We're never one to shelter the tools that we use in our engagements. They're public to, you know, our clients and anybody that we network with. We like to share because, you know, we like everybody else to grow with us. So a good resource to see what all records are published in your DNS, you can use DNS Enum is one that we use. DNS Recon is another good tool. The Columbus Project made a tool that I love personally. It goes out with the domain you search for, gives all the subdomains that it sees through certificate transparency, and even associates the last known IP that that subdomain or domain had. And so it just provides a lot of insight for you, not only into A records, but also your text records, MX records, and everything. so that you can see what everybody else can see. Or you could also just go into, you know, your management console, look at what you have, go through that, and clean it up that way. But
yep. Agreed. It really comes down to, and we harp on this all the time, guys, and that is know what you have, right? And if you know what you have and you're managing it properly, you know, these kind of things aren't going to creep up on you. But, you know, man, the number of times we go do an engagement and we come out, hey, did you even know that you had these like seven expired, you know? So yeah, just keep an eye on what you got and manage it appropriately. So guys, that's all we have time for today. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did and you want to ask questions, you know, you can reach out to us. Offset.blog is where our blog is at. You can reach us there. Comment, you know, if you're looking at us on YouTube. And so, yeah, we look forward to hearing from you guys. If you have questions, comments on your kind of journey in the DNS security world. And we'll see you next Wednesday.